Hello, this is James Cox with the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, and welcome. I'm excited today to have another very special guest. This is, you know, I guess the top of the food chain in our Kajikembo and American Kajikembo Association. So with me today, again, an honor to have Chief Senior Grandmaster Gerald Chavez. That's a lot of words in the title there, Chief Senior Grandmaster Chavez, right? And in our American Kajikembo Association, you know, we kind of went through together. Of course, you're before my time as far as a lot deeper and more involved and intelligent with this Kajikembo system. I'm the junior, so I appreciate all the path you've paved and the sacrifices you've made, and you know, for me to be where I am and the connection with you, with what we've had. And I'll let you introduce yourself and tell a little bit more. But you know, we had Chief Senior Grandmaster Donald Nahulewa Alihi. Right. Who basically created or, you know, made the difference to be recognized through Sijo Imperado of us having the IM into Kajikembo in a very eclectic mixed martial art is what we do here. But, you know, our podcast is about martial arts, it's about the life of martial arts, the benefits, the value, and the things we do that are on the mat and off the mat. So I didn't really put questions together because I know you can talk very well, sir. So, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, sure. Maybe the journey?
Sure. Hello. My name is Gerald Chavez. I started martial arts back in 1967 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I went to a brand new high school that was just built called West Mesa. And it was an interesting school. They took us from, I was in the North Valley, kind of country kids, into this, what was our version of an inner city school. And so we went to this school, and there was a lot of tough kids there, you know, kind of street kids and some pretty interesting folks. And I grew up, you know, just around, you know, horses and out in the middle of nowhere. And so I met a teacher there by the name of Sam Allred, and he was a science teacher. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it. He, you know, looked like a pretty meek guy till he hit you. And that was, the meek was gone. And he had a judo club there. It was really neat. I couldn't make it in football, baseball, basketball, nothing. And I joined the club. It was really interesting because I started in judo. I got my brown belt in judo, Nikkyu senior grade. And I finally found something I could do, and I could do it on my own. And I could do it as a small person.
Was it a team sport, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And most martial arts were invented by, you know, a smaller frame folks back, you know, originally. And so that was in 1967. From 67 to 72, I got my black belt in 1972. It was his first black belt that he gave.
No, I'm sorry, but you said Sam was at a judo club. Was he not Kajikembo at that
time? Oh, yes, good question. He was. He had the Duke City Judo Club, which was the oldest high school judo club in the country at the time. But at the same time, he was teaching us Kajikembo, okay. And he was studying Kajikembo with Ali'i Nahulewa at the same time. He got his black belt from a Texas judo player, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the man's name. So he had but judo started to wane a certain amount, and then karate started to get a little more popular, and along with, for example, like when the Kung Fu TV series came out, you know, that became real popular.
Right.
And judo made it into Olympics.
Hollywood affects everything.
It,
right?
it does. It guides a lot. It guides a heck of a lot. Yeah. And so we started having tournaments. It was really interesting because Mr. Allred was one of the first promoters. He held actually the first full contact match in the Southwest. We had a not a lot of big names except for the Golden Greek, Demetrius Havanas.
Yeah. Were they wearing boxing gloves? Or
they wore boxing gloves. No, none of that existed yet.
Okay.
June Reed didn't invent the stuff by then.
Right.
And so we were, it was kind of blood and guts karate at that time. And anyway, so we had our first Central North American Karate Championship, the National Black Belt Grand Championship, and there was and one other tournament that we would hold annually. And we started bringing in all of these names, and people didn't know them at the time. We had Chuck Norris, Bill Wallace, Ron Marchini, you name it. We had them there.
And this was before internet, so it's weird. Like today, how do you not know people? Well, we don't have internet.
Right.
Then.
And not only that, nobody knew them because it was sort of that point karate fighting, and nobody wanted to see that. So it's just like we want to see people get punched and stuff. And yet these people, we got, when I got to meet all of these people, I mean, I literally had Chuck Norris in my living room, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really kind of cool. And awesome. Bill Wallace and all these people.
He was a young guy then.
Oh, he was a young guy. Yeah. Traveling in his car, one point tournament to another. Luis Delgado was a member. He was another very good
player. Was he in the movies yet?
None of that existed.
That's awesome.
None of them did that. Grandmaster Aldo Cascos, Luis Delgado. I mean, I could go on and on and on with the names of the people. And so as a kid in martial arts, it would be like a little leaguer sitting in the middle of Mickey Mantle and Ted Williams. Yeah. And, you know, that's what it was to me. Yeah. It was like everybody. You couldn't get better than that. And these were real gentlemen, good people, honest people, hardworking people, and good fighters.
Yeah.
You know, not a loser in the bunch. It was amazing. So I had that honor of that. And when I got my black belts in 1972, Mr. Allred, who really always did things in style, my black belt certificate has Chuck Norris's name on it, Bill Wallace's name on it. They all signed it. It was like, you know.
It was pretty awesome.
To me, it was very big, very important. And so, and our tournament started drawing. We were in the top 10 tournaments in the country, you know, all of our stuff. And so we did that. And then we went on to teach self-defense. We started doing a lot of self-defense. Nurses, teachers, stuff like that. Because Mr. Arbor was a teacher himself, so he gave us a lot of. And so that was my background initially as far as martial arts. I did some tournament fighting. I did this, that. My heart was in self-defense. Mm-hmm. That's really what I wanted to know. How does this work in a street situation? So that's when I started getting into volunteer at the Rape Crisis Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the Domestic Violence Center there, and started to see how can this work? And then I started, in 1976, I moved to the Bay Area and started studying Wing Chun with Grandmaster Chris Chan, the Wing Chun style, which is an upper body style, and to me a very effective style. And it was good for me because I was an okay kicker, but I wasn't like you. You know, my kicks didn't go over anybody's head unless they were lying on the ground. and so I incorporated Wing Chun. Whenever you got your black belt from Mr. Allred, he expected you to go out and add something.
Was you to learn something new and different?
Some guys went
bring
to full,
it back
right.
or add it for yourself.
Some went to full contact. Some went to wrestling. Some went to, you know, police training. Mm-hmm. You know, myself and I went to Wing Chun.
That was big of him to even do that, you know, let alone, you know, because a lot of people don't, I don't know, it's like they want to keep their student, they want to keep them kind of, you know, just, I don't know, hit into that or whatever,
well, some,
but he was
some
open-minded.
Teachers get intimidated by the knowledge, and, you know, if you can't, if the second you stop learning is the second you stop growing, you know, if you don't consider yourself a student, then you've automatically lost everything you've had. You have to be a student to keep growing. And so I went to San Francisco, and that's when I started studying Wing Chun. That was really an eye-opener for me. I was really turned on to Wing Chun first in 1970 by a Grandmaster Eric Lee, who taught me sticky hands. And I thought, this is an amazing art. And then, of course, Bruce Lee came along, and he was a Wing Chun instructor. And he studied with Yip Man, and so did my teacher in Hong Kong. And Chris Chan, and then I was studying with him at a Kaja Kempo school, Rick Alamany. And so when I went in there just as a beginner in the Wing Chun Club, and we started doing certain things. And when people would aggress, I would do certain things. And he came up to me in class one day after the class was over, says, "You do Kaja Kempo, don't you?" I says, "How did you know that?" Mm-hmm. He lived on the islands and knew that we were
a little crazy,
I guess. And so it paid off. And so that's kind of my history. I'm right now a 10th degree senior grandmaster, thanks to Ali'i and Nahuleva and my instructor, senior grandmaster Sam Allred. And I got my 6th degree in Tumpai from senior grandmaster Jan Lorn in Tumpai's system. And in the process this year of completing my black belt in Kodokan Judo.
Awesome.
Yes, I'm going to be doing that. So with my new shoulder and my new knee and everything.
You're ready to hit the mat, literally.
Everything's new, yeah.
Right. Well, that is good. Man, a lot of experiences through all those years, decades. You have anything that sticks out, you know, from your martial arts journey? There's just, It could be even just a crazy experience or memory, you know.
Well, you know, one that comes to mind, and this was very interesting. I have my PhD in clinical psychology, and one of the things is a lot of my friends can to tell you, you do a dissertation when you're getting your doctorate, and dissertations are notorious for just being brutal, completely brutal. They just knock you down 20 times and hope that you don't get back up when you're defending it to get your doctorate. And so when I was talking to different people about defending, and the professors saying, well, this is going to be really hard, you got to be ready, what they did not understand was I had been through Kajikembo.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing they could do that would intimidate me. So it gave me a sense of
confidence.
Yeah, confidence. And also in the when I was doing therapy, and when I investigated and explored anger and aggression, to me that was really exciting. And I think I had the upper hand in the sense that I didn't fear these people I was dealing with. And so I think the typical therapist might be a little intimidated to kind of confront them in an appropriate manner,
right.
A, you know, logical, you know, therapeutic manner. But I also didn't have any fear of that.
You've trained with Kajikembo people.
Yeah, they were all crazy. They can't be fixed, but they can fight.
A little off subject, but it just sparked in my head as a funny memory. I was recently training with an MMA fighter, and a great fighter, wrestling, kickboxing, straight MMA, no traditional martial arts or belt rings or whatever. And he saw us doing some Kajikembo, and he was just totally shocked about us kicking to the groin and punching in the groin so much. And he literally looked at me, he's like, what kind of brutal sport is that? And here he is, an MMA fighter that takes elbows to the face.
Exactly.
And, you know.
Right.
But he's like, and then I said, he said, is that legal? I was like, yes, it's encouraged.
Exactly.
Kicking to the groin.
Yeah.
What kind of sport is that?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Well, most people in the street won't. They don't care.
Right.
We don't care either when we're in the street, so that's kind of the key. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and it's, so in my journey, you know, which has been a really good, fun journey, I worked with a really good friend of mine who is also a psychologist by the name of Dr. Tom Carey, and I was teaching in this little broken down, literally this shed in an alleyway. Because that's the way I taught. It was kind of old school. A lot of the older Chinese instructors taught that way. And a mutual friend of ours introduced me to him. And he was starting a program called the Challenge Program, which was really interesting. It was the first one in the nation to incorporate karate, kajikembo, kung fu, and all this into the mental health world in a way that was empowering. Now, I was doing this stuff prior to meeting Dr. Carey through the Rape Crisis Center in 1978. And I walked into the Rape Crisis Center thinking, well, I'm this black belt. I'm going to teach these folks, you know, how the cow eats the cabbage, so to speak. I'm going to teach them how to. And I learned more from them initially because they taught me what their fears were, what their strengths were, what trauma was like, and what's a real application of self-defense in a real situation. Yeah. So you're not going to get up in a sexual assault situation, for example. You're not going to punch some attacker in the face. You're not going to kick him in the stomach. You're not going to sweep him on the ground and stop the sexual assault. So, and you were mentioning MMA earlier. Look at the attacks, the strikes those guys are taking.
Mm-hmm.
Brutal elbows to the face. Brutal, I mean, all kinds of things. It doesn't stop them. So if a person, be it male or female, who's 120 pounds is being assaulted by a 200-pound person who oftentimes could be on drugs, definitely hopped up, something's going on. Doing traditional martial arts against that person is not going to work. And I've learned that, and I've learned that. And I've written 3 books. And the second book I wrote was on this topic, and specifically on how to deal with a 200-pound, 300-pound, whatever person who wants to kill you or rape you, and sitting there fighting with them doesn't work.
Right. You know, it's communication as well. I mean, it's a lot, all those other benefits, right? It's almost basically some mental games there.
Well, my formula that I devised at the time was run, talk, defend. Run, first thing, whatever you do, just leave the situation if you can. I don't care if they're taking your car, your handbag, leave. That's all there is to it. If you can't leave, try talking to them. And one thing I did learn, and this was through people like my teacher, Mr. Sam Allred, and my friend Dr. Tom Carey, who's a 14-degree black belt in Kempo, I saw them handle groups of people verbally and either bring those people to tears or bring them to laughter or educate them. So if you're dealing with an attacker, remember, attackers are expecting one thing. They are there to degrade, humiliate, control. Okay? So if that's their idea, then what I told people, if they haven't already grabbed you and tried to assault you, if you can talk to them, you can do a number of things. You can change their mind.
Yeah.
You can buy time. You could size them up. And the other thing you could do is you could make sure that you're breathing, because we don't breathe when we get scared. Mm-hmm. So if we're breathing, we're now creating the relationship in a different manner. If I'm afraid of you, then they're winning this.
Yeah, right.
But if I'm overly aggressive, they're going to fight back.
Yeah.
But if I'm neutral, what I'm doing is all of a sudden this person doesn't quite know what is going on here.
You've taken either game plan or strategy.
Yes, exactly. And we tend to go about these things. For example, I give the example. Let's say you wake up in the morning in your bedroom and some guy's laying on top of you on your blankets with a knife. You know, the first thing we want to do is struggle. I don't want this guy near me. So what do I do?
Yeah.
You know, like I say, don't just say something, stand there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's going to happen right now. There's a blanket, they're there. And so if talking doesn't work, and talking may work, I could give you example after example, real life examples.
Communication was successful.
Communication, working on the, if there's any, even a string of empathy in this person, being able to say something like, you know, do you have a mother? Do you have a sister?
Because they are still human.
Right? Yes,
and
exactly.
There's a way to bridge, to connect, so
looking,
be empathetic.
Yes, looking for that empathy. And then, because remember, thoughts create, and this is something on one of your ads actually, but thoughts create emotions. The combination manifests a behavior. If we validate what they're thinking, okay, then their emotion is being in control. But if we counter it, not necessarily put them down and call them idiots, but if we're able to say, wow, do you have a daughter, or do you have a wife, do you have a mother? Has this ever happened to you? See, all of a sudden what you're doing is you're decreasing the emotion and bringing about what we're hoping is less distorted and a little more rational thought. And then they're able to maybe think. And I've had people do that. I had one woman who was 80 years old. When I knew her, she came to a class of mine. And she went home. A guy was waiting for her in her house. The guy, when she got in, he grabbed her. And this guy tried to sexually assault her and could not, for whatever reason, could perform, whatever that was. They started talking. They were the similar culture and similar religion. And she ended up talking to this guy for about 3 hours.
Wow.
He had jumped in her bedroom, her kitchen window, broke a glass top table when he jumped in. And by the time he was leaving, he asked 2 things. True story. If he could write her a check for the table he broke, and if he could come back and visit.
That's amazing. So early on had intention to rape or murder.
That was his goal. And so, and that's a true story. And I have probably hundreds of those.
Communication's key, right?
Yeah.
And just, well, the proper.
Right. And so
time and place.
I talked about leaving the situation, talking. And number 3, if the talking isn't working, That's when you defend.
Yeah.
And how do you defend? You defend by giving the person the idea that you're going to not fight back and that you're going to go along with them. Because what you're doing is you're then decreasing.
Element of surprise.
You're decreasing their fighting mind. You're changing the fighting mind, okay, to now I'm controlling you. And that's what you want. This is what I want them to see.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to do and that's the next thing they see is nothing because they can't see anymore.
Not fuel to the fire.
But you'll notice what I did. We're talking eyes. We're talking testicles. We're not talking noses. We're not talking jaw. We're not talking nothing, you know, in the movies. We're talking how do you stop the person? You stop them by giving the idea that you're not going to fight back. Look, there's nothing here. These are my most powerful weapons right now. Mm-hmm. And what you're thinking is that I'm showing you that I don't have any weapons. And I'm just putting my weapons as close as I can to take your eyeballs out. Yeah. One woman
you're passive
said...
passive and it's a setup.
Right, exactly. Because you are decreasing their fighting mind. And that's what you have to do. You decrease the fighting mind. You know, that theory goes back thousands of years. I don't care if it's Sun Tzu's Art of War or Chuang Tzu's Tao Te Ching, any of that. It talks about you want to decrease that aspect of the person's fighting mind. Then they think they want. A rapist, a domestic violence person, they want to dominate. Mm. Let them think they are.
Run, talk, defend.
That's it, man.
Run, talk,
that's
defend. It, yeah. Hey, you've done a lot. I've seen, been even a part of your women's self-protection classes, courses. You know, here you've taught in Abilene. You know, in Mexico City, the connection you've linked with me to the Mexico City group has been priceless.
Yes,
you know, and it's even changed when I teach self defense classes because I've stolen a lot of things from you. So sorry about that.
That's okay. I wasn't using them. They're all yours, man.
Just kind of added to that. That's what we do, right? We keep learning, growing, and helping each other.
Yeah, you have to keep moving forward, just like a shark. A shark has to move forward in the water or it dies. It doesn't stop. And that's what we have to do. And it's interesting because in seeing what you're doing is very interesting because knowing what you do with some of the kids I've seen you do when your team comes out and they're doing their jumps and kicks and all that. And I remember when Dr. Carey and I would have these demonstrations for the parents. And these are kids who were not totally well put together for a number of reasons, right? And we would do our demonstrations, not as flashy as yours, nor did we hand them weapons because their parents wouldn't appreciate that. But they would do very similar things. And to see what you're doing is you're giving them, you're teaching them that their thoughts are, if they're in control of their thoughts, they're in control of their emotions. If they're in control of their emotions, the manifest behavior reaction is going to be positive. It's got to be positive.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's avoiding the kid who's, you know, offering them drugs or
the bully.
And so
it's a good point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very. I liked that one ad you had somewhere, I thought, which I really appreciated, was, please don't teach your kids how to bully because we're teaching ours how to fight.
Yeah. Some people didn't like that.
That's brilliant.
Some people didn't like it, but hey, you know.
It's brilliant. It is.
It is what it is. Yeah,
because right now kids, if a kid defends himself in a typical traditional public school, they get suspended.
Yeah. But.
But they're alive.
And they're probably not bullied next time.
Right. Exactly.
By that kid, at least, usually. But yeah, you got to stand up for yourself. Well, Mr. Chavez, man, I really appreciate the time. And anything you would like to add or say to the listeners?
Well, yeah, I think wherever you are, whatever your life direction is, to find places. I could speak on behalf of, of Grandmaster Cox here, or of in my town in Albuquerque, Dr. Tom Carey, who's a teacher. I have my own dojo there. But finding your way. Because this gives you more than just, and I'm not putting down other sports, but this gives you, I think, a broader base of understanding of life along with physical fitness, mental fitness, and emotional control. And so I just think it offers so much. Well, granted, it's been my life, for over 50 years, so.
Yeah.
And I'll continue doing it.
I couldn't imagine me not doing martial arts.
Exactly.
I couldn't imagine it,
It carried me through my days of marathon running. It carried me through. And I went from bull riding to judo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was much easier, judo was.
Yeah, right. Awesome. Well, again, man, I commend you for everything you've done for me and for all that has followed us and taking the legacy of Ali'i and passing this down and just all the things that you have done. So thank you, and thank you for the time. And we're here for a special training event. We're going to have a full mat of people that you and some other special guests will be teaching this weekend.
Really excited.
Well, they're excited too. So let's have a blast, and thank you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thanks, guys. Stay tuned in. Check out the other podcasts as well as the YouTube channel.